They came to the M25 Beltway and decided that discretion was the better part of valor. Decided to hit it for a quarter circle counterclockwise and then head down to the West End on an easier route. But the M25 itself was pretty much a parking lot. "How do people stand this every day?" Pauling said. "Houston and L.A. are as bad. But it kind of explains why the Jacksons escaped." "I guess it does." And the traffic moved on slowly, circulating like water around a bathtub drain, before yielding to the inexorable pull of the city. They came in through St. John's Wood, where the Abbey Road studios were, past Regent's Park, through Marylebone, past Baker Street, where Sherlock Holmes had lived, through Marble Arch again, and on to Park Lane. The Hilton Hotel was at the south end, near the truly world-class automotive insanity that was Hyde Park Corner. They parked in a commercial garage underground at 10:45 in the morning, maybe an hour before Lane and his guys were due to check in. "Want lunch?" Pauling said. "Can't eat. I'm too knotted up."
"So you're human after all."
"I feel like I'm delivering Taylor to an executioner.
He deserves to die."
"I'd rather do it myself."
"So make the offer."
"Wouldn't be good enough. Lane wants the partner's name. I'm not up for torturing it out of the guy personally."
"So walk away."
"I can't. I want retribution for Kate and Jade, and I want the money for Hobart. No other way of getting either. And we have a deal with your Pentagon buddy. He delivered, so now I have to deliver. But all things considered, I think I'll skip lunch."
"Where do you want me?"
"In the lobby, watching. Then go get yourself a room somewhere else. Leave me a note at the Hilton's desk. Use the name Bayswater. I'll take Lane to Norfolk. Lane will deal with Taylor. I'll deal with Lane. Then I'll come back and get you, whenever. Then we'll go somewhere together.
Bath, maybe.
To the Roman spas. We'll try to get clean again." They walked past an automobile showroom that was displaying brand new examples of the Mini Cooper they had been driving. They walked past discreet setback entrances to blocks of mansion flats. They went up a short flight of concrete steps to the Park Lane Hilton's lobby. Pauling detoured to a distant group of armchairs, and Reacher walked to the desk. He stood in line, watched the clerks. They were busy with their phones and their computers. There were printers and Xerox machines behind them on credenzas. Above the Xerox machines was a brass plaque that said, "By statute, some documents may not be photocopied." Like banknotes, Reacher thought. They needed a law, because modern Xerox machines were just too good. Above the credenzas was a line of clocks set to world time, from Tokyo to Los Angeles. He checked New York's against the time in his head. Spot on. Then the person in front of him finished up. He moved to the head of the line. "Edward Lane's party, have they checked in yet?" The clerk tapped his keyboard.
"Not yet, sir."
"I'm waiting for them. When they get here, tell them I'm across the lobby."
"Your name, sir?"
"Taylor." Reacher walked away, clear of the busiest areas, and found a quiet spot. He was going to be counting $800,000 in cash, and he didn't want an audience. He dumped himself down in one of a group of four armchairs. He knew from long experience that nobody would try to join him. Nobody ever did. He radiated subliminal stay-away signals, and sane people obeyed them. Already, a nearby family was watching him warily. Two kids and a mother camped out in the next group of chairs, presumably off of an early flight and waiting for their room to be ready. The mother looked tired, and the kids looked fractious. She had unpacked half their stuff, trying to keep them amused. Toys, coloring books, battered teddy bears, a doll missing an arm, battery-driven video games. He could hear the mother's half-hearted suggestions of how to fill the time.
"Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you draw a picture of something you're going to see, like therapy?"
He turned away and watched the door. People came in, a constant stream. Some weary and travel-stained, some busy and bustling, some with mountains of luggage, some with briefcases only, all kinds of nationalities. In the next group of chairs, one kid threw a bear at the other kid's head. It missed and skidded across the tile and hit Reacher's foot. He leaned down and picked it up. All the stuffing was out of it. He tossed it back. heard the mother suggesting some other pointless activity.
Why don't you do this?
He thought, why don't you shut the hell up and sit still like normal human beings? He looked back at the door and saw Perez walk in, then Kowalski, then Edward Lane himself, third in line, then Gregory and Groom and Addison and Burke. Roll-on bags, duffels, suit carriers, jeans and sport coats, black nylon warm-up jackets, ball caps, sneakers, some shades, some earphones trailing thin wires, tired from the overnight flight, a little creased and crumpled, but awake and alert and aware. They looked exactly like what they were, a group of Special Forces soldiers trying to travel incognito. He watched them line up at the desk, watched them wait, watched them shuffle up one place at a time, watched them check in, watched the clerk give Lane the message, saw Lane turn around, searching. Lane's gaze moved over everybody in the lobby, over Pauling without stopping, over the fractious family, onto Reacher's own face. It stopped there. Lane nodded, Reacher nodded back. Gregory took a stack of key cards from the clerk, and all seven men hoisted their luggage again and started through the lobby. They eased their way through the crowds, shoulders first, and stopped in a group outside the ring of armchairs. Lane dropped one bag and kept hold of another and sat down opposite Reacher. Gregory sat down too, and Carter Groom took the last chair. Kowalski and Perez and Addison and Burke were left standing, making a perimeter, with Burke and Perez facing outward, awake and alert and aware, thorough and cautious.
Show me the money, Reacher said.
Tell me where Taylor is.
You first.
Do you know where he is?
Reacher nodded. I know where he is. I made visual contact twice, last night, and then again this morning, just a few hours ago.
You're good?
I know.
So tell me where he is.
Show me the money first.
Lane said nothing. In the silence, Reacher heard the harassed mother say,
Draw a picture of Buckingham Palace,
he said. You called a bunch of London private eyes, behind my back. You tried to get ahead of me.
A man's entitled to save himself an unnecessary expense.
Did you get ahead of me?
No. Therefore, the expense isn't unnecessary.
I guess not. So show me the money.
Okay, I'll show you the money.
He slid the duffel off his knees and placed it on the floor and unzipped it. Reacher glanced right, glanced left, saw the kid about to throw the tattered bear again, saw him catch the expression on Lane's face, and saw him shrink back toward his mother. Reacher shuffled forward on his chair and leaned down. The duffel was full of money, one of the O-Town bales, newly opened, part depleted.